Cami Winnett sang about it. Heck, she even spelled it out. It depends on how you crunch the numbers, but Nevada frequently shows up as the state with the highest divorce rate. Whether that's because of Nevada's stressed economy or because of the many marriage stretching adult diversions to be found here, couples have been calling it quits in Nevada since the days of Reno divorce ranches. So are Nevadans divorcing in greater numbers than the rest of the country? And if so, why? And if you're considering a divorce, thinking about it, what do you need to know before you enter the courtroom? Joining us is Stacey Rocheleau, who is a divorce attorney here in Las Vegas. Stacey Rocheleau, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dave. Glad to be here.
I mentioned the Reno divorce ranches that made a quickie divorce possible in the 1930s through the 60s. The ranches are long gone, but is it still easier to get a divorce here than it is in other states?
It is. And the reason I think it is because of our jurisdictional period, the 6 weeks. And I think that's why most people in the 30s would come here. Stay for 6 weeks.
When you say jurisdictional period,
yes,
6 weeks. Talk about what that means.
That just means that you have to live here for 6 weeks prior to you filing the complaint, whereas most states is 6 months.
Okay, so it's a lot shorter period of time.
Much shorter period of time.
So when a client comes into your office, what's the first thing you ask?
The first thing I ask would be, how can I help you? What are you looking for? You know, have you talked to your spouse about the divorce that you're here to talk about?
You really have to ask that. And do you often get, no, I haven't?
I get no a lot of times.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of times.
Oh, boy. What's the most important advice you give your clients?
I would probably say to educate themselves before they go through the process, to know what they're looking at and what they're facing.
And when you say educate, how do you advise educating oneself?
I would look at the financial background, you know what you make, know what you earn, know what assets you have, what bank accounts are out there, what retirement plans are out there, because all of that is going to determine your financial future once you separate.
Hmm. In your experience, are clients usually making a rational decision because they thought about this for a while, or do people sometimes often decide to get divorced because they're angry or hurt and it's a little more impulsive?
There's a lot of emotions that go along with divorce. It might be an impulsive decision, but a lot of times it's been stewing and brewing in the background for quite a while. So I would say it's an emotional process, though. It's usually an emotional trigger that breaks the camel's back, mm-hmm. so to say.
As an attorney, do you ever wish you'd gotten a counseling degree as well?
Many days, yes, many days.
Do you feel you have to give personal advice as well as legal advice?
Yes, I am. I'm an attorney and a counselor, but unfortunately, I tell people, I said, you really need professional advice because I could probably do you more harm than good. But yeah, no, it is. It goes along with the territory. It's an emotional process.
Indeed. Dr. Wendy Manning is with us as well. She is director for the Center for Family and Demographic Research. Dr. Manning, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you.
We've seen a few lists that put Nevada at the top for rates of divorce, but you say we're about average. Why do you think so? And where are those other researchers miscalculating?
Well, I would say it just depends a lot on how you calculate it and how we were thinking about it is what we call a refined divorce rate is amongst those people who are married. And so if you just look at the total population and you estimate divorce, you might see that Nevada would rank higher. But if you say amongst those people who we use the term are at risk or exposed to being divorced, you first have to be married. So that statistic sort of takes into account the proportion of the state that's married. And then when you do it that way, Nevada is still in the top half. They're ranked number 15. So it's not that they're low. It's just they're not number one. And when we estimate it this way, we see that Alaska would rank number one in terms of divorce rate.
Okay, so Nevada's in the top third of states, but that's
yes.
really about it.
Yes.
What factors, economic or otherwise, would lead to one state having a higher divorce rate than another?
Well, some of it has to do with the proportion of the population that's married, that has to be an important piece of it. Because in order to get divorced, you have to be married, and so that's the first thing. Other factors that are really important are when you're thinking about economic factors. A key piece that's been found recently has been foreclosure rates as being related to divorce rates in different states, and that can be very important. But interestingly, it didn't seem like unemployment rates were tightly tied to divorce rates.
Hmm. Now, also joining us is Kenny Hoyer. Kenny Hoyer is the owner of Eccentric Tint and a divorced father. Kenny Hoyer, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. You've been divorced twice, and you had two very different experiences.
That's correct.
Your second divorce, as I understand it, was a lot more difficult than the first one. Tell us why.
Correct. My first divorce, been married like 20 times or whatever. No divorce is a good divorce. The first marriage was a very volatile experience, you know, a lot of abuse emotionally, physically, towards myself from my first wife. And then the opposite was my second wife, which was, you know, a phenomenal relationship, intelligent woman, very loving, very caring, hardworking. And to go from, you know, a bad marriage to a, you know, almost perfect marriage, and then going through separation and divorce and everything, it really hit me a lot harder.
It sounds like you didn't see the second breakup coming.
No, not at all. No, I did not. And it's been very devastating. And emotional process for me.
Hmm. Why do you think the second marriage failed?
Communication, lack of communication. Hmm. You know, in our everyday lives, now that, you know, it basically takes two incomes to provide for a family and to live comfortably, you know, it just took a lot of time. You know, being a business owner, football coach, pro MMA fighter, you know, I had a lot of things going on. So I feel like I neglected her in that aspect. And then, you know, her not communicating with me and letting me know and letting me be aware of the situation ultimately led to us separating.
Hmm. So it sounded like the second divorce was a lot harder, as you say, from an emotional perspective. Was it harder from a legal perspective as well?
Well, you know, there's no bitterness between us. So in the state of Nevada, you pay $289. You file an uncontested divorce. 2 weeks from the date that you file, you're legally divorced. Hmm. So it's really an easy, simple process as long as there's no fighting or bickering or, you know, greediness as far as assets are concerned and things like that.
Were there any other complexities in either of the divorces, kids, things like that?
I have two children from my first marriage. I do have full custody, legal and physical custody of my daughter and my son. My second wife and I did not have any children, so I think that made it a lot easier, the process of divorce.
Julia Lewis joins us now as well. Julia Lewis, welcome to KNPR.
Thank you.
Julia Lewis is co-author of The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce, you wrote this co-wrote this book, which focuses on children of divorce and how it affects them later in life. Kenny was just telling us a little bit about his kids. What can those going through a divorce do to mitigate any harmful effects on their children?
Well, I think the main thing is not to involve the children in the, particularly in the emotional bitterness that can occur. Children need to feel that both parents are still committed to them, and they certainly do not need to feel that they are a bargaining chip and an emotional sledgehammer to be used one against the other. So the more parents can keep children out of that whole arena and make children feel like the child's life is still going to be secure and loved.
Is that something that is easier said than done?
I think it's easier. It's definitely easier said than done. Yeah. I mean, if you read all the literature on how to get through a divorce successfully with your kids, the literature is full of things like that. In the actual life, people are human, you know, and divorce is a high emotional, usually a fairly high conflict time, and it requires a lot of effort to separate out the child arena and try to keep that peaceful from the chaos that's going on with divorce.
Mm-hmm. Kenny Hoyer, I saw you nodding your head.
Yes, that's correct.
What was your experience?
I actually did a lot of coping with divorce classes. I sought counseling for single parents and things like that, because I didn't want the divorce to affect my children, because ultimately, as a parent, you want your children to succeed and be happy and, you know, go through the marriage experience and hopefully have children of their own and actually live life and love life.
Hmm. Julia Lewis, are some children just more resilient than others when it comes to overcoming the effects of divorce? What qualities do those children have?
Well, children in general are more resilient or less resilient, you know, and then when you add in a real life-altering event like divorce, the less resilient a child is overall, the less they're able to withstand, you know, the pressures that divorce puts on kids. So that, I mean, if you have a child who's at all vulnerable anyway, emotionally, intellectually, physically, those children are the ones who are going to suffer the most, because they're less equipped to deal with all the different changes and all the different transitions that divorce requires of kids.
Are there any potential advantages for children whose parents have divorced? Can they become emotionally stronger or more mature for having lived through this process?
Yeah, you know, some kids, I've been involved in very long-term studies of the effects of divorce on children. So we saw kids early on when the divorce happened and then followed them through 25 years. So some kids, what divorce can do for some kids, and these are the more resilient ones, they can emerge as adults being way more equipped, not in the relationship realm, intimate relationship realm, but in the work realm. They can emerge being way more equipped to deal with difficult people and difficult work situations. They're very good at negotiating, very good at compromise, very good at kind of tolerating irritable, upset coworkers. And so some subset of children of divorce as adults are extremely successful, mainly in the work field, having to do with, you know, what they having to do with their divorce experience.
Mm-hmm. Stacey Rochelle, when you're talking with the two parties about kids, is that a flashpoint where things can go really bad sometimes when there are children involved?
It can, just as Julia Lewis was saying, that's the children oftentimes get involved in the emotional process of the divorce. And if they're not resilient kids, which, you know, there are a lot of non-resilient kids, they take on that emotion that the parents are going through and that conflict that the parents are going through. And it can be a real, real bad situation for the kids.
As an attorney, how do you navigate those issues? Do you ever find it necessary to remind your clients that they are theoretically supposed to act in the best interests of their children?
I do, and I have to, and there are court rules that require the parents not to involve the kids. You know, that notwithstanding, I refer them to books, co-parenting classes, individual therapy, help, to try to mitigate some of that.
What about you? Did your fairy tale Las Vegas wedding turn into a nightmarish Nevada divorce? We are talking about divorce in the Silver State, and wondering, too, if you have advice for others who are considering untying the knot. Looking back, what would you have done differently? Share your experiences with us at 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Write to us if you like. You can reach us at knprnews.org. And we're also on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is @KNPRNews. Stacey Rochelle, we've noted that child custody and related issues can make divorces bitter. But surely there are problems in things like property disputes as well. Don't people always feel bad about having to sell a house and maybe move someplace cheaper and smaller? Lifestyle change like that, isn't that a kind of a hot-button element too?
It is, and it's a hard one to grasp, that you're taking a two-income family living in one house, you're breaking apart that family, and now you've got two overheads, basically. So a lot of times the reality is they will have to downsize because just the economics of it can't sustain the larger lifestyle.
When you're adding these things in, and things like alimony or child custody payments that can eat up a big chunk of income, isn't some bitterness inevitable in just about any breakup?
I would think that it would have to be. I mean, I can't say from personal experience, but I do know that it's very hard to pay alimony when the divorce is now over. Just in talking to the clients that I have that have to pay it, they are very bitter about having to continue to pay for many, many years.
What do you advise clients to do when they want to fight about things like property settlements?
I'd advise them to look at the big picture, because really when you're talking about, you know, furniture or, you know, items, I mean, that's going to be the most expensive used furniture in town, because you're often paying two attorneys to fight over, you know, dividing your furniture and things like that. So look at the big picture, and especially where there's kids involved, think about the impact that that conflict is having on the children.
Kenny Hoyer, as you look back from your experiences, what advice would you give listeners? Is there anything that you regret doing or not doing as you were going through either of your divorces?
Of course. Number one, communication. Whether or not it be good or bad, I think you have to take the time aside for each other, you know, especially when children are involved. Like I said, you know, we both had busy lifestyles, and just make time for each other. It's so important that you have that one-on-one interaction, you know, take a walk, talk to each other, go to a movie, or, you know, just spend time and attention, you know, with each other and communicate.
We are talking about divorce in Nevada. Nevada often shows up at the top of lists of states with the highest divorce rates and such. Now, on the other hand, you also heard Dr. Wendy Manning telling us just a few minutes ago, Nevada's in the upper third, but it's definitely not number one when it comes to actual divorce rates. Dr. Wendy Manning is with us. She is the director for the Center for Family and Demographic Research. Also with us, Stacey Rushlew, who is a divorce attorney practicing here in Las Vegas. Kenny Hoyer, who is the owner of Eccentric Tint and has had the experience of divorce on a couple of different occasions. And also with us is Julia Lewis. Julia Lewis is co-author of The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce. If you've got some insights to share with us, please call. We'd like to hear from you, 702-258-3552. That's 702-258-3552. Or you can write to us at knprnews.org. Dr. Wendy Manning, we've talked about factors that could be predictors of divorce. What factors lead to the likelihood of a successful marriage? Are there things like age, influence of parents and family? Well, what goes into a successful marriage?
Well, a successful marriage, as one of the speakers talked about, was healthy communication, as well as people who are older when they get married are more likely to have long-lasting marriages. Those who have higher levels of education have longer-lasting marriages. Those who are both in their first marriage have longer-lasting marriages, so, which is a little tricky because about one-third of marriages last year were second or third or fourth or higher marriages. So coming to a marriage with a history of divorce is a risk factor. Having children from prior relationships is a risk factor. So there's quite a few social and economic elements that go into divorce.
How important to the success of a marriage is it to marry someone who is very similar to you in terms of education, religion, political beliefs, and so on?
It is an important factor. Couples who have large age gaps, have large differentials in education, anything that, and as you mentioned, differences in religious beliefs also experience higher divorce rates. It doesn't mean that everybody who has those is going to divorce, but we are seeing that about almost half of first marriages do end in divorce. So it's complicated. There's a lot of factors.
Julia Lewis, are adult children of divorced parents more likely to get divorced themselves?
Unfortunately, they are. Yes, that's a very clear statistic. Adult children of divorce tend not to marry as often, but when they do, they are more likely to get divorced. And I think as the previous panelist pointed out, if you're an adult child of divorce and you marry another adult child of divorce, even if it is a first marriage, your likelihood of divorcing is way higher. Just because you both have that history.
Kenny Hoyer, were your parents divorced?
Yes, my parents divorced when they were 4 years old.
When I was four years old. Okay, so you were very young. Do you think your family life as a child had any impact on later relationships?
I kind of took it the opposite direction. I never wanted to get divorced. You know, I wanted to have children. I wanted to have a mom and a dad in the home. And that's why I fought so hard for my first marriage to work, and it just ended up not panning out, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. On the line with us now is Mary Wilson, a longtime member of the Supremes and a longtime singing legend. Mary, welcome to the program. It's good to have you with us.
Hi, thanks. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm going to pull over to the side.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a great idea.
Okay.
But Dr. Wendy Manning, while Mary Wilson is pulling over to the side, what does your research show on this whole idea of parents who divorce kind of passing it on to kids, if you will? Is divorce passed down through generations?
I mean, it's not really passed down through generations, but we talk about social learning, and that you might learn that if you are in an unhappy marriage, that your parents can survive and move forward, and it might not be the most devastating experience in the world. You also might share some of the same socioeconomic characteristics that your parents had that would lead to higher levels of divorce in terms of maybe getting married at an early age or having children at an early age. And so those could be playing out, but the idea of social learning is sort of interesting. It could work either way. You could learn how hard it is to survive a divorce, or you could see, oh, it actually is okay to get divorced.
Mm. Mary Wilson, have you pulled over someplace safe?
Yes, I'm fine now.
Oh, great. Well, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
If you would share with us, what's your story?
Well, first of all, just let me say I do listen to your program all the time.
Well, thank you.
But I was married, and I found that when my husband and I decided to divorce, it was very important for me to tell my children positive things. Children are very funny. They see what's going on. But if you talk positively about your spouse, then they're more likely not to take sides. Hmm. And that's kind of what I did in life. And I talk to my children now, and they love their father probably more than they love me.
Was that, Mary, was
I've
that...
I never talked bad about it.
Yeah. Was that difficult to do? Because there can be such bitterness in breakups like that.
It was very difficult to do. But I always said, this is between your dad and I, and not you. And, you know, you must love him just like you love me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how I handle it, and I talk to them now, and they all say that we knew how Dad was, but you were really nice about how you talked about him.
Yeah, well, was your ex husband? Did your ex husband behave in the same way? I mean, was he insistent on speaking kindly?
Well, I won't go into that.
Okay,
but what I will say is that he was very good with the children. He really was. It was really just he and I had a very volatile marriage. And I do have to say that he and I now are very good friends.
Mary Wilson, if you want to hang on for just a second, Kenny Hoyer, Mary's talking about the whole notion, I guess, as the saying goes, of taking the high road.
Was that
your decision? Did you make that decision as well?
That was my first marriage. Very volatile, very bitter, very much filled with anger. When you have children, they take a priority, and you have to set your emotions and your anger and bitterness aside for the benefit of your children.
How hard was that to do? That must have been one of the tougher things in life.
That was the ultimately hardest experience I've ever had to go through, because my ex-wife would badmouth me to the children and disrespect me and in front of the children and belittle me and everything like that. And, you know, I just had to bite my tongue, and I had to say, hey, you know what? This isn't positive for the children, and it's not going to help them in any way. And they'll see later on in life, you know, what's going on. Just try to keep them away from the situation as much as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Mary Wilson, again, thank you very much for calling. Great to hear from you. Our number is 702-258-3552, 702-258-3552. We're talking about divorce in Nevada, and if you have some experiences, stories, thoughts, opinions to share with us, call us, 702-258-3552, or write to us at knprnews.org. Stacey Rocheleau, we know from Kenny's story that divorce can be as difficult for men as it is for women. It doesn't really break in one direction or the other. But I'm wondering if that's what you see in your law practice in general. Are the struggles roughly kind of even down the line? Or does one gender tend to struggle with divorce more than the other?
I would say what I see is that where the children are involved, the women tend to struggle more. And I think it might just be as the mothering effect. You know, they want to mother their children and they want to, you know, control all aspects of the situation. And there's differences in parenting between mothers and fathers, so fathers might be more hands-off. So I think, you know, the mothers might be more emotionally involved with the children, which is bad for the fathers because then the fathers tend to step away. And that's not what they should be doing in a divorce situation. They should be engaging with their children. Mm-hmm. And so I just think from an emotional standpoint, that's probably what I see. Mm-hmm.
Julia Lewis, what does your research show about the impact of divorce on men versus women?
Yeah, it's like everything else. It's not real simple. Our research showed clearly that men, and this is largely a middle-class sample, men financially emerged from divorce in a lot better shape than women did. And I would agree with your previous panelists that the women, in addition to the financial issues, generally took on more responsibility and for the parenting, and that was a greater burden for them post-divorce.
Julia Lewis, when you say that women tend to come out of it in somewhat rougher shape financially than men, I suspect that has probably been a very long-term trend. Has it changed at all, or has it evolved at all? Is it less of a discrepancy than it perhaps used to be 50 or 100 years ago?
I think it depends on, you know, again, the education level of the women and their previous employment history. Clearly, in the people that we studied, the more education a woman had and the more she had experience with actually working and holding down a job before the divorce, the better off she was after the divorce.
So it sounds like the idea of divorce can be a real struggle for stay-at-home parents.
Absolutely. Hmm. Absolutely. I mean, many people, you know, most people don't go into a marriage thinking, oh, well, at some point I'm going to be a single parent. You know, the idea is it's a partnership and you're going to do all of this together and you divide the roles accordingly. And so if your role as a stay-at-home parent is, you know, separated out from the general marriage idea, then you clearly have a harder time.
Mm-hmm. How does alimony factor into that? I mean, isn't alimony intended to be something of an equalizer when the two parties go
the
separate ways?
Well, I can speak mainly about California in that alimony generally is not enough to equalize it, and there is a considerable drop-off in consistency of alimony payments as you know, the post-divorce years roll by.
Mm-hmm. Stacey Rocheleau, what about the state of things in Nevada? Is alimony something of a, does it serve as something of a decent protection for stay-at-home parents when divorces happen here?
It's supposed to, and it can, but I agree with Julia Lewis that it's, in Nevada, it's not enough. It's not enough to replace that full income. And in Nevada, when we talk about alimony, you're looking at two components. You're looking at the amount, you know, the monthly amount, and then you're also looking at the duration, which is how many years is it going to continue for. So, you know, if you've got a real short-term marriage, that alimony is not going to be for very long, if at all. So it's only in those longer-term marriages that you'll even look at alimony.
Is that something that is unique to Nevada, or is that the way alimony is handled across the United States?
I would think that's how alimony is handled across the United States. The longer the marriage, the more expectation there is that you'll be provided for, especially if you're a stay-at-home mom. Typically, the mothers are the stay-at-home. So then that's where alimony gets factored in.
Julia Lewis, is that the kind of thing that perhaps newlyweds should think about? Maybe it's not quite in the same category as a prenuptial agreement, but is it the sort of thing you should think about if one parent is thinking about staying home?
Well, I think it's something I agree with that in theory. I think that's a good idea. I seriously doubt that people who are excited about getting married, it's their first marriage, they're entering into it, you know, I really, while prenuptial agreements are more common now, the idea of, like, thinking about, well, if you're a stay-at-home mom and we get divorced, what's going to happen to you at the time that you're marrying is a little, I don't know, I think that's somewhat unrealistic, actually.
Stacey Rushler, from a legal standpoint, what do you find is the most common grounds for divorce?
Well, it's incompatibility.
Incompatibility.
And that's only because we're a no-fault state. So most divorce petitions filed just claim that we are incompatible in marriage.
That sounds like a catchphrase that covers an awful lot of territory.
It covers everything. And you'll probably hear on the news, you know, these movie stars filed for divorce citing they're incompatible in marriage. Mm. That's the catchphrase across the country.
Kenny Hoyer, now we found you through a local business that specializes in throwing, of all things, divorce parties.
Yes, sir.
And there's an optimistic note at the end of all of this, but what about your divorce inspired you to celebrate it, to mark it as an occasion?
Well, you know, a lot of times men don't admit it because, you know, we're supposed to be the macho, you know, the tough guys. But a lot of men are insecure. A lot of men, you know, we have emotions. We cry. We get upset. We get depressed. We love. And when you go through that divorce process, it's devastating, especially when you're committed to somebody and you love them and you want to spend the rest of your life with them. You want to grow with them. You want to die with them. With that being said, you know, I started to go into a depression, the what ifs theories, you know, I was confused and frustrated and angry and hurt and devastated. So I said, you know what, I'm going to have to switch this up. This is not me, you know? And so, the divorce party planners, did a divorce party for me that I celebrated Friday and Saturday, and ABC Nightline News is doing a segment on it, and it's going to air this Saturday at 10 p.m. and stuff in front of 45 million viewers nationwide. So I'm kind of an open book. You know, what you see is what you get, and you know, and my wife is a very you know, very quiet, very private person. So. Hopefully it doesn't upset her, but
not too much of a shock, but yeah. Goodness, 40 odd million people. One never knows.
Yeah.
Wendy Manning, in our final minute, I've seen some things lately that suggest that the percentage of children born out of marriage to millennials is quite high. Average age of marriage has gone up quite a bit in recent years. Based on current trends, is marriage as an institution likely to survive?
I think it will. Americans have a great optimism about marriage. When they get divorced, they often remarry, so they continue trying even if they don't get it right the first time. And even though people are delaying marriage, they're not foregoing marriage. So they're eventually usually getting married. They're just deciding to do it a little later.
Wendy Manning is director for the Center for Family and Demographic Research at Bowling Green State University. Kenny Hoyer is the owner of Eccentric Tint and a divorced father and soon to be seen on ABC. Julia Lewis is co-author of The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce. And Stacey Rush Lewis, a divorce attorney based here in Las Vegas. Thank you all very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Dave.